All right, do we have everybody online pretty ready to go? I'm going to go ahead and take that as a yes, and with that, I'll go ahead and call long range to order if we could go ahead and take the roll.
Here.
Excuse.
Representative Jim Hamilton.
Present.
Senator Kerry Smith.
Here.
Representative Sue Vinton.
Excused.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, indeed. Kathy, did you say something? Can we turn Kathy up
slightly? Yeah, we need to have everybody in the room, including including Jamie, speak into the mics, please.
Absolutely. Yeah, that would certainly be.
Want to make sure the podium mic is on. I don't know if there's going to be anyone there to speak in person, but, you know, that helps.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll get that, or I will go check that here as soon as we get started with our regular business. So today it sounds like we have a few more projects to go over. We're going to get an overview of renewable resource grant program, as well as have a conversation about a couple different items before the committee. So with that, I think that I would turn it over to Richard here really fast before we get started through our project list. I believe he has a little update for us. Is that correct, Richard?
That's correct. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So we have on pages 113 and 114 of volume 4 a list of three projects that did not meet startup conditions from the House Bill 11 in the 2019 session. And we're required to report on those projects that didn't meet startup conditions. Well, Volume 4 went to print in probably October, and at that time, it was true. Since then, all three of those projects have made great progress. All three of them are either in startup, have met startup, or are just right on the cusp of meeting startup. So for those three projects, good news all around. And then I had one other item I wanted just to mention, and that is that yesterday we had a question from the committee on one of the applicants and whether or not they had received CDBG funding. And I have learned that Darby did not receive a CDBG grant award. All of the applicants were notified whether they were successful or unsuccessful in December. But unfortunately, Darby was not awarded. The good thing about CDBG is that it's an annual program, so they'll be free to reapply here within a year, as opposed to the legislature, which is, of course, biennial. And that's all I have, Mr. Chairman.
Excellent. Thank you very much. Richard, do we have any questions or comments about the update either on the projects or the funding side from members of the committee? Seeing none here in person, my ability to look online at the moment is not exactly stellar. Heather, do we have any?
There are no hands raised.
Okay. All right. Well, that sounds good to me. Kathy, did we have any more updates before we rolled into projects? I don't think so, right? Most of the rest of our business is after projects for the day.
No, I will have comments and lead you through the budget analysis when that time is right for the budget analysis for the renewable resource grant and loan program.
Perfect. And are we planning on having Richard or Rachel start us off here with the project list?
I'll get going here.
Excellent. Thank you very much.
So the first project today is Big Timber. This project ranked number 32 for TCEP in House Bill 14 and number 60 for RRGL, also in House Bill 14. Information can be found on page 142 of the TCEP handout and page 80 of the RRGL handout. The project will replace or loop about 4,000 feet of water distribution mains. The grant request is $625,000. The total project cost is $1.5 million. And you will see several projects today with a grant request of $625,000. And that number becomes common because it is based on eligibility and the user rate target rate ratio. So in order to be eligible for a $500,000 grant, if you have user rates at least at the target rate, you're eligible for $500,000. If you're 125% of the target rate or 150% of the target rate, you would be eligible for $625,000 or $750,000. Just a little explanation on the 625 number that you'll see several times today. So with that, I think we have the mayor of Big Timber who had signed up for testimony.
I believe we do indeed. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. Excuse me. Good morning, Mr. Chairman Hopkins and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Roland Carlin, K-A-R-L-I-N. I am the mayor of Big Timber, a graduate from Hellgate High School and the University of Montana. I'm here today representing the city of Big Timber Water System Improvement Project. A little background on Big Timber is the population of Big Timber has remained constant at around 1,600 since I moved there in 1978. It is located between the Boulder River and the free-flowing Yellowstone River. The Crazy Mountains are my eye candy every day. Big Timber was just named as having the best small rodeo in the state. It is a good place to raise a family. Sweetgrass County was determined to be one of the safest counties in relationship to crime. Our original water system was constructed in the 1920s, 100 years ago. In the last several decades, the city has replaced or upgraded portions of the water system, but it still has a large amount that needs to be replaced. The city averages 38% water loss, which amounts to about 52 million gallons a year. Leaking water mains have a very serious risk of contamination. In Big Timber, the leaks do not surface due to the porous soils, so they are very difficult to locate. The preliminary engineering report identified a large number of distribution system improvements were necessary, as well as construction of a new water storage tank. The cost for only a portion of the distribution system improvements, replacing the 4-inch cast iron mains, and addition of a storage tank is estimated at nearly $7 million. Too costly to complete improvements in a single phase. The proposed project is over 3,900 lineal feet and only the first phase of many more improvements to be necessary. The city has made very serious efforts to address these public facilities issues on their own resources. Within the last 2 years, the city completed a $4 million water treatment plant that was financed only through city reserves and loan funding. Similarly, upgrades to our wastewater treatment system were completed as part of another nearly $4 million project, also funded only through city reserves and loan funding. The city is stretched thin, and grant funding is critical in our small community to be able to address these basic infrastructure improvements to provide the essential services of clean drinking water. Our public works director informed me before I came here today that the engineering for this project is about 90% complete, so therefore we're borrowing a term from the Obama administration, shovel ready. Thank you for your time. I'm available for any questions you may have.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much. With that, members, do we have any questions here in person? Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question for Mr. Carlin. Mr. Chair, Mr. Carlin, I'm not picking on Big Timber. I want you to know that. I have great fondness for the community, but you're here in person, and so I get a chance to ask some questions that I would like to have asked everybody else online. If I look at the page, you know, this page in our book that has basically a summary of your application, talks about a rate with proposed TCEP assistance of a little under $96, and a rate without TCEP assistance of a little under $100. So about a $4 a monthly difference, $4 monthly. And so when I look at that small difference there, I think to myself, why don't you just increase the size of your loan, perhaps with SRF, rather than the grant money? I mean, obviously, grant money is nice. You don't have to pay it back. But if we're being fiscally prudent with the state's money, why would we be persuaded to give you grant money rather than say, hey, borrow a little bit more for $4 more a month?
Thank you for the question, Mr. Chairman Hopkins and Representative Hamilton. I think the only way I can answer that is my personal rates. When I first moved to Big Timber, the last couple of decades, my average water bill, wastewater bill, and garbage was about $60 a month. And when we got the loans to improve our water filtration system and our wastewater system, it increased what I pay per month by twice as much. I'm paying $110 a month now for my city services. And in the summer, that's even more because of irrigation for lawns and stuff. Now, I'm probably able to absorb that a little bit because I managed to have a pretty good retirement system. But there's a lot of people on fixed incomes where that hit them pretty hard. And if we had to raise those rates again to fix this infrastructure problem that we have, I think that would be a burden for them. Representative Hamilton, I hope that answered your question.
Mr. Chair, follow.
Follow.
Mr. Chair and Mr. Carlin, not to put you too much on the spot here, I'm sympathetic, but you know, in this sheet that we have here, the difference between having the TCEP money and not having the TCEP money, you're going to raise rates either way, it appears. In fact, down here at the bottom, it said under condition of the grant, you'll raise it to at least 101. It's just that difference between having the money in a grant and not having the money in the grant is very small. Yet it's $750,000 out of the state budget. So that's where I'm struggling, is to kind of balance the fiscal prudence of that.
I'm fairly certain that the city is going to have to do both. We've got a lot of improvements that need to be made. So we do need this money from this committee, from House Bill 14, and I'm fairly certain that we're going to be getting more loans, because we don't even have the water tank and some of that other things in this application. And when we're looking at a $7 million increase there, we're strapped pretty tight. Is there anything that you can add to that from the Great West Engineering? Chat, Craig? Would it be all right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, well,
excuse me, Mayor Carlin. Yeah, Chairman Hopkins, Representative Hamilton, I'm Craig Erickson from Great West Engineering. I'm a funding specialist. And I think the key point here is to, the takeaway is that this is a multi-phase project. This is the first of several phases to address a very expensive problem. And if I did the math quickly this morning, it looks like as a result of this project, the city is looking at a $5.16 per month rate increase. That's approximately 10%. So we start raising rates $5, $6, $7 for every phase, and then we get back to around what Mayor Carlin was talking about. That all adds up, and it becomes burdensome to the community. Yes, you're right, they could go out, borrow the money, but there's more phases to come, sir, both not only on the water side, but also, I would imagine, on the wastewater side and several other facilities that are owned and operated by the city of Big Timber. So that's why clients like ours, like Big Timber and several others, they take this multi-phase approach and tackle these problems in little bits rather than absorb a huge rate increase to address everything at one time. So the $625 requested by the city, you know, is a reasonable amount, and again, part of that partnership between the state of Montana and local governments to provide infrastructure and keep it affordable. So that's my perspective on that, Representative Hamilton.
Thank you both for letting me
thank you, sir.
Pester you.
All right. With that, members, do we have any further questions, comments from committee members online? It does not look like I am seeing any. So with that,
there are no hands raised.
Perfect. With that, Mr. Mayor, thank you very much. Thank you to both of you for coming to speak with us today. We certainly appreciate your time. Absolutely.
Thank you, Chairman Hopkins and members of the committee.
And then really fast, before we move on to our next project, right about when we were starting this one, I think I saw that Senator Boldman had a hand up. I just want to make sure that that was for her to get on to Zoom as a panelist and not because she had a question. So, Senator Boldman, are you there?
Yeah, thanks, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to make sure Kathy saw me, and as usual, she's a rock star.
Perfect. All right. Just wanted to make sure. Representative Hamilton. Yes, that was going to be the next part. So during testimony, we did get a couple knocks from somebody on Zoom who probably had their microphone still unmuted. So something to keep in mind as we go through these. Yeah, that's about it. With that,
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
We're having a hard time hearing you. I'm sorry.
First time people have ever complained about that. Okay, let's go ahead. I think yesterday we had this microphone working slightly better. Does that sound about right? Excellent.
Perfect.
Yeah, one of the fun parts about this session, good old technology. So with that, I think that we are probably good to move forward.
Next project is the Big Mountain County Sewer District. This project ranked number 33 for TSEP in House Bill 14 and 23 for RRGL in House Bill 6. Information can be found on page 140 of the TSEP handout and page 43 of the RRGL handout. The project consists of rehabilitating approximately 1.5 miles of leaking sewer main. Big Mountain is requesting $500,000 from TSEP, and the total project cost is $1 million. Mr. Chairman, Board President Jen Sato would like to testify on behalf of Big Mountain today.
Okay, and I see Jen there. Jen, can you hear us?
I can. Can you hear me, Mr. Chairman?
We can indeed. Good morning.
Okay, good morning, Chairman Hopkins, committee members, and guests. My name is Jennifer Sato, S-A-T-O, and I'm the president of the Big Mountain County Sewer District Board in Flathead County. I appreciate your time in reviewing our request for funding at today's hearing. I presume you all received my written testimony on our project budget. I sent those in case my internet went down, as, of course, because I'm on the mountain. So I'll highlight a few points. Our Big Mountain community, the city of Whitefish, and the whole Flathead Valley are experiencing significant growth and development. The word is out. Our district's wastewater gets pumped down to the city of Whitefish for treatment at their plant. The inflow and infiltration of our existing lines of clear water into the system is nearly 50% of the total wastewater volume. Our district pays the city of Whitefish based on the volume at the meter. And notably, the city of Whitefish has among the highest water and sewer rates in the state. Three major benefits of this project include, number one is hydraulic load reduction on the district's collection system and the city's wastewater plant. Number two is increased treatment temperatures at the plant, allowing improved nutrient removal and discharge permit compliance. And number three, energy conservation and cost reduction by reducing unnecessary volume that requires pumping to the plant. Our total sewer improvement project is $1 million. The request for $500,000 to support these improvements for our district is approximately 2% of the total $23.57 million infrastructure requested statewide from TSEP. And combined with the $125,000 RRGL grant, this will minimize the user rate impact going forth for this project. Big Mountain County Sewer District has had a five-year plan to increase rates to build up funds for the upcoming INI project. We have designated approximately $375,000 for this project with loan and reserves. Our request for infrastructure, while disproportionately small relative to the region's population growth, is consistent with the goals of the TSEP and the RRGL programs. The Big Mountain County Sewer District urges the committee to consider our proposal a top-tier priority. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members, for your time. I would like to defer now to Paul Montgomery.
All right, that sounds good, and thank you. Paul, can you hear us?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
We can indeed. Good morning.
Good morning. For the record, my name is Paul Montgomery. I'm the president of Anderson Montgomery Consulting Engineers in Helena. Last name spelled M-O-N-T-G-O-M-E-R-Y. I'm the planning and design engineer speaking on behalf of the Big Mountain County Sewer District as a proponent of House Bill 6 and House Bill 14. I think Jen covered things really well. I'm not sure I can add much to the framework there other than maybe quantifying a couple of things. The city of Whitefish charges the district about a penny and a quarter for each gallon of wastewater delivered to the treatment system in Whitefish. And as Jen mentioned, about half of the total discharge, or about 11 million gallons per year, is clear water that simply occupies space and lowers the treatment temperatures at the treatment plant. And one thing I would note here is that the city of Whitefish is right now in the middle of constructing a new, $21 million mechanical wastewater treatment plant in order to remove nutrients and protect ambient water quality in the Whitefish River. And the removal of clear water and increasing treatment temperatures is going to be imperative for this new treatment plant to work properly. So the district conducted closed circuit TV inspections of this targeted 8,000 lineal feet of pipe segments this spring. And we have identified a lot of sources of infiltration and inflow. So I think we're going to have a pretty effective project as we go through rehabilitation and replacement of these leaking mains. Other project benefits include, like I said, enhanced pollutant removal at the city's wastewater treatment plant, protection of water quality in the Whitefish River, and energy conservation through reduced pumping. The Big Mountains effluent goes through two major pumping stations in the city, Whitefish. So cutting 11 million gallons a year out from those two pumping stations is going to significantly reduce energy consumption. So I think with that, and I'd like to thank Jen for covering things so well, too. I'd be happy to answer any technical questions the subcommittee might have.
Absolutely. Well, both Jen and Paul, thank you very much. With that, I would go to questions or comments from members of the committee. Seeing none here in person, and if I can make sure that I'm using a computer correctly, it does not look like I see any online either. So thank you both very much for your time this morning. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And with that, I believe that we are ready to move on.
Our next project is for the city of Three Forks. This project ranked number 34 for TSEP in House Bill 14 and 63 for RRGL in House Bill 14. Information can be found on page 160 of the TSEP handout and page 83 of the RRGL handout. The project consists of constructing two new wells to replace three existing wells with poor aesthetics and installing arsenic treatment. Three Forks is requesting $625,000 from TSEP, and the total project cost is approximately $3.1 million. And Mr. Chairman, Aaron Schatauer would like to testify on behalf of Three Forks.
All right, and while we add on Aaron really fast, just want to check with committee members. Did we all get the important parts of Rachel's talk here on the project? Yeah, we had you breaking up a little bit, but I don't think we had you breaking up enough for us to try to make you repeat yourself. So with that, Aaron, are you with us?
I am. Thank you.
Excellent. Good morning.
Park, thank you for pronouncing my name absolutely correctly. Nobody ever does that.
Sure.
Good morning, Chairman, members of the committee. I want to thank you, first of all, for this opportunity to speak today. My name is Erin Schatauer. I am here today as a resident and a city council member of Three Forks. First off, I'd like to say it's my hope that you will fully fund all the projects detailed in these bills. I know we are not the only community feeling the need right now. But specifically, I'm here to talk to you about what's going on in Three Forks currently. We are in the process of exploring options to increase capacity and improve our drinking water system. Our current system is old and it's badly in need of updating in order to safely and effectively produce enough water to serve our residents here today. Our wells are in poor condition and the needed demand may not be able to be met if something happens to one of those wells. Additionally, we're surrounded by water in Three Forks here, but the groundwater, unfortunately, is in very poor condition. As you saw in your report, it contains arsenic and requires an expensive treatment to make it safe for our residents to use. At this point, if our system were to fail, we believe it could be detrimental to our community as the current system is at capacity. We've identified solutions to address the need, including drilling new wells and exploring additional sources of water. The funds that are included in these bills would really help us to identify our best path forward and address the town's current needs and provide clean, healthy drinking water for the people who call Three Forks home. We feel that we really need to improve our drinking water system and the time is now to do it. It's imperative to the well-being of our community that we address this need as soon as possible. And I believe that we owe it to our residents to offer them healthy, clean water. And again, the funds in this bill would really help us to do that. So I'm available for any questions as well as our engineers. And just thank you for your time and consideration on this matter.
Absolutely. Well, thank you. With that, I would go to, well, let me make sure that we, okay. Now I would go to questions from the committee. Discussion, Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question from Ms. Schatauer. Mr. Chair, Ms. Schatauer, it says in your application here that at present you don't have meters to identify how much water is being lost to leakage. Will the new wells be metered, or will residences be metered, or will there be some change in that?
One of our engineers could probably speak best to that, but what I can tell you is that we are in the process of looking at that metered system, especially for multifamily units. We're trying to go back and look at how things were metered. There's not a system in the past to have that system be equitable for everyone in our community. So we are in the process of doing a lot of work right now as it goes to water and sewer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Hamilton. I think we had some extra hands raised during the meantime. Rachel, somebody on your end, can you tell me if Susan is looking to testify possibly on City of Three Forks or waiting for the next project, as it were?
I'm sorry, I'm not familiar with that name.
Oh, and sorry, Rachel, looks like you were cutting out as well. Susan, are you there?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
Well, we can indeed. Were you looking to talk on this project?
Yes, I was. I was going to help Erin answer the question about the meters. My name is Susan Hayes. I'm with Great West Engineering, and I'm one of the engineers on the project.
Perfect.
So I could answer that question about source meters that Representative Hamilton had.
Please.
Any new wells would certainly be metered. That would be included as part of the project. All of the residences within the City of Three Forks are already metered. As Erin said, they might be exploring how to differently structure some of the rates for multifamily units, but all connections are currently metered, and any new wells would also be metered.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much. I'd ask for further questions, comments from members of the committee. Seeing none here in person, nor any hands raised online, I would thank you both for coming in to speak with us this morning. We appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Absolutely. And with that, I think that we are good to move forward.
Okay, next up is the town of Flaxville. This project ranked number 35 for TSEP in House Bill 14 and number 50 for RRGL, also in House Bill 14. Information can be found on page 147 of the TSEP handout and page 70 of the RRGL handout. The project will replace about 4,200 feet of water distribution mains. It is a phased project. The TSEP grant request is $625,000. The total project cost is about $1.25 million. And I believe we have Mayor Wittick from the town of Flaxville online, I think.
Good morning, Mayor. Please go right ahead.
Good morning. Thank you, Honorable Chairman Hopkins and members of the committee. And my name is Connie Wittock, W-I-T-T-A-K. I'm the mayor of Flaxville. And can you hear me?
We can indeed.
Okay. And I have Greg Lukasik from Great West on the line also. To help with anything that I may mess up. So the town of Flaxville has been through a lot of water and lagoon issues the past few decades. A bit of history. I sent two copies that I uploaded on the link, and the one with the point one is the most updated one. And then I added a few things just listening to the previous. Sorry, that's the bell. I'm a teacher, but I took a little break here. We've raised water rates four times. Sewer rates twice in my time of tenure as the mayor since 2006. Our patrons are handling this well. And as they know, that infrastructure improvement is vital for our community. High nitrate issues have been a challenge. They're now resolved with Dry Prairie hookup just last month. December was our first month of their water. And I don't know if I could ever explain the relief of not having to treat our water with around $800 to $1,000 worth of salt each month. That's a huge savings for us. I don't know how much the water is going to cost. We have a ballpark figure, but we haven't been billed from Dry Prairie yet. In 1954, our water lines were installed, and we've had to deal with an average of three water breaks a year for as long as I can remember, and I've lived there most of my life. We've had our standpipe to the water tower break on Christmas Eve in 2010, which was a cost of over $84,000 to replace, and $64,000 of that came from emergency DNRC funds. So we've been very grateful for those. In 2017, we replaced 300 feet of water line on State Highway, and for us it was significant for 300 feet because I learned a lot. It was problematic because it took us 3 years to get that paved again. I was naive enough to think that the State Highway guys would help us, but that was a little too much for them. So the bids came in ranging from $10,800 to $31,000. So, of course, that took us a while and took some of our reserves as well. And we've utilized TSEP and DNRC grants in the past for our $1.8 million lagoon project. And muskrats breached the bentonite walls, and it began to leak too much. And we held off for 7 years to complete that project and received funding from both of those sources to do that. We've recently purchased new meters out of our funds for $17,000, but without the help of TSEP and DNRC, we'd still be trapping and shooting muskrats and praying for no leaks each day and hoping that when we shower or when we flush, the toilet water still comes out. So on behalf of the town of Flaxville, we're grateful for what we've received, but are still in need for upgrades in this two-phase project we have planned. So with that, I take any questions and defer to Greg for those that I cannot answer.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much. With that, I'd ask the committee for questions or comments. Not seeing any online, nor here in person. I think that we are good. So thank you both very much for coming in this morning. We appreciate your time.
Thank you very much.
And with that, let me make sure I didn't miss somebody here. With that, I think that we are good to move forward.
Okay, we're going to go to Fort Benton. This project ranked number 38 for TSEP in House Bill 14 and number 71 for RRGL, also in House Bill 14. Information can be found on page 148 of the TSEP handout and page 91 of the RRGL handout. The project is for the construction of a 900,000-gallon drinking water storage tank. The TSEP grant request is for $625,000. The total project cost is about $1.6 million, and I believe we have Mayor Morris on the line.
Yes, I'm on the line. My name is Rick Morris, M-O-R-R-I-S, and I'm the mayor of the city of Fort Benton, starting my 24th and last year, and that's a promise. I appreciate Mr. Chairman and the committee members. I appreciate the opportunity to talk to you for a few minutes. City of Fort Benton currently has three water tanks. Combined storage is 1 million gallons. The first was built in 1934, the second in 1947, the third was added in 1967, and it was a used tank. Currently, all three tanks are in need of repainting, re-epoxy, sandblasting inside, and re-epoxying, and all three need to be painted on the outside. Estimated repairs to this is between $200,000 and $300,000. So the city council decided to proceed with looking into replacing all three with one tank of 1 million gallon capacity. It seems to make no sense to put that kind of money into the three existing tanks when, although they were repaired in the short term, they're still aging tanks. And that about sums it up. I would like to urge the committee to give us a serious consideration of this request, and appreciate the time to talk to you. Thank you.
Absolutely. Well, thank you, Mayor. Let's go ahead and check and see if we have questions or comments from members of the committee. Seeing none here in person and not seeing any online. I'd like to thank you for coming in to talk with us today, and I think we'll find ways to keep you involved here going into the future, so you have an excellent day.
You too, guys. Thanks so much.
Thank you. And not seeing anyone else, I think, for this project, I think we are good to go ahead and move forward.
Next up will be the town of Valier. This project ranked number 39 for TSUP in House Bill 14 and number 20 for RRGL in House Bill 6. Information can be found on page 161 of the TSUP handout and page 40 of the RRGL handout. This project is for improvements at the wastewater treatment facility and for replacing about 1,500 feet of wastewater collection lines. The TSUP grant request was $625,000. The total project cost is just over $2 million. I do not know if we have anybody on the line. We may have received some written testimony from the mayor. I'm not positive of that either, but yeah, I'm not sure if the mayor is on the line or not.
Well, we will give it a second here, but I am not seeing anybody on Zoom. Heather, is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay, and we certainly do have public testimony for distributing here today towards the end of our meeting, so we will go ahead and guess that it is in there. But as always, if we have somebody come on after the fact, we are always okay capturing that testimony. So with that, I think we are going to move forward.
Mr. Chairman, I will try getting closer to my computer and speaking louder, but if you can't hear me, feel free to let me know. Next up, we have the town of Sunburst. This project ranked number 41 for TSEP in House Bill 14 and was not funded for RRGL. Information can be found on page 159 of the TSEP handout. The project consists of connecting a new well that has been donated to the town, installing water meters, a new bulk water filling station, and backup power at the water treatment plant and rehabilitation of an existing storage tank. Sunburst is requesting $625,000 from TSEP. The total project cost is approximately $1.3 million. And I believe Mayor Holly Hovland is there in person to testify on behalf of Sunburst.
Good morning, Mayor.
Good morning. Good morning, Chairman and committee members. My name is Holly Hovland. I am the mayor of the town of Sunburst. Hovland spelled H-O-V-L-A-N-D. And this is our engineer, Jason Crawford from Triple Tree, for questions after. The town of Sunburst was recommended for TSEP funding for our water system improvement application. We were not recommended for the RRGL funding due to our grant reviewer's assumption that we had planned to not connect to North Central Montana Water District. It was a misconception and has been a problem. We really need that funding as well, which I'll explain. The town of Sunburst has a water supply issue. Our two current wells that we have online run continuously throughout the summer. If or when one of those wells goes down, we cannot keep up with the demand of our town, which this can cause quality issues and be more than the EPA-established MCL, which is definitely a problem. Another major issue that we have is the condition of our water tank. Our 2018 drive inspection of the interior coating of the tank, it had severe corrosion of the tank, as well as of the tank coating, as well as welded steel exposed and rust formation inside the interior of the tank. We're not a metered town, which definitely causes some difficulty in establishing equitable distribution and operations and maintenance costs for our residents and business owners. For our connection in the future to North Central, this is a very imperative part of our project to be able to become a town that's metered, to be able to make sure that we know what our water distribution is going to be and who's responsible for the water that's being used. It's critical to our community to receive the funding for the recommended TSEP funding as well as the RRGL, even with the discrepancy on the assumptive matter of us trying to separate ourselves from North Central. This is not only important for the current demand of our system, but also the health and safety of Sunburst, as well as future connection to North Central. We need all of these working parts from both the RRGL and TSEP funding to be able to make it successful. I'd like to thank you all for your consideration in this and awarding the Town of Sunburst funding, your dedication to our state. And if you guys have any questions for myself or for our engineer, I would take those.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much. With that, I'd ask members of the committee for questions slash comments. Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question for Ms. Hovland. Mr. Chair and Ms. Hovland, so if the RRGL money does not come through, what is the priority order of the other parts of the project? What would get left out, I guess, is what I'm asking.
I would like to say that we need the RRGL to continue with the entire project. We need it for our matching funds. Otherwise, basically, the project may not be able to move forward because all of the components of the project for both RRGL and TSEP are vital to us being able to maintain our system, keep it healthy, and keep our demand up, as well as moving forward to be able to get a connection to North Central in the future when that is an option for us. Without the funding, say we had to pay for the well to come online with our own funds, or we had to pay for the recoating of the tank with our own funds without grant funding to help with that, the affordability to connect to North Central in the future, we would not be able to come up with that money ever, maybe. And so it really is vital that we have all of the funding that we have requested. The town of Sunburst has never applied for nor received TSEP or RRGL funding before. This is a situation where we know that there's nothing that we can do, and we can see the future, what we need to do to move forward, and this is the only way that we can see doing that and still giving people the availability to live in Sunburst and afford to have water.
Thank you.
Thank you for your question.
Thank you, Representative Hamilton. With that, I'd ask for further questions, comments from members of the committee. See none here online. Thank you, Mayor, for coming in to talk with us this morning. We appreciate both of your time.
Thank you for your time.
Absolutely. And so, Rachel, in the morning here, before we had started going down our project list, you had mentioned to me that there might be a couple individuals coming in to testify on some projects that we had previously gone over. I'm pretty sure I remember one of them being Darby. I can't really remember what the other one is right now. Could you refresh us a little bit, please?
Certainly. So the city of Libby, Mayor Brent Teske would like to testify for me. Except with the timing. Mr. Teske, if you can raise your electronic hand, then the Zoom coordinator can unmute you.
Excellent. I do think that we just got matted in there. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and committee members. My name is Brent Teske. I'm the mayor of the city of Libby, and thank you for this time to share Libby's story.
Absolutely. Please go ahead.
Okay. The grant that we're requesting is for improvements to our wastewater treatment plant. The treatment plant was constructed in 1986. With an expected 20-year life cycle. 34 years later, the plant is still operating. We've been able to make some improvements, but much work is needed. Our major concern is the plant controller. It is an antiquated PLLC, and there are no replacement parts or components for that unit. The PLLC operates the plant, the brain, so to speak, so if it fails, the plant must be manually operated. Libby's collection system was constructed in the 1950s, and at the time, the available pipe material was clay tile. There are many broken sections, too many to replace at one time. These breaks cause backups, which damage homes, and groundwater inundation, which creates treatment plant issues. Our grant request is for funding to replace the plant controller and several failing sections of sewer main. Libby is a disadvantaged community. Logging and mining used to provide a strong employment base. Logging has shrunk to near nothing, and there are no active mills in the area in northwest Montana when there used to be a number of various sizes. Mining is no longer active and no longer provides a stable employment base. Both new mines and logging sales are stopped by environmental groups, and Lincoln County has one of the highest unemployment rates in the state. Today's Libby's population is two-thirds low to moderate income. Nearly 24% are at below poverty rate. The median household income is barely 60% of the statewide median household income. Even with such a low median household income, our water and wastewater rates are very high. The combined water and sewer rate is approximately 180% of the targeted rate. The City of Libby relies on Treasurer State Endowment grants and renewable resource grants to reduce cost to the users for improvements which are essential to the city and its residents. Without the grants, the city and the residents could not complete essential infrastructure improvements. We are working proactively to avoid a crisis by planning and prioritizing needs. Without the grant assistance, Libby could not complete these critical projects. If these projects are not completed, the treatment plant could fail. Wastewater discharge will violate the permit for the Kootenai River, and the Montana Department of Environmental Quality would take enforcement actions. Residents and our insurance will suffer the damage of raw sewage backups in their homes. I urge the committee to approve the recommendations contained in the report to the governor to authorize the level of funding needed to keep the plant operational and thus help Libby. I thank you for listening to my plea this morning, and I would entertain any questions you may have.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for joining us here this morning. I would go to questions, comments from members of the committee. Representative or Vice Chair Cuff.
Mayor Teske.
Yes, sir.
Have we talked about this project?
Is that Mr. Cuff?
Yes.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. And these are straight grant projects, correct? Yeah. So there's no added cost to the taxpayers on burdens that way. I was out of the room there for just a bit, Mayor Teske, and what was the timetable?
The timetable for the project?
Yes.
So it would be this next grant cycle. So we would like to, if we can get the grant approved 2021 and make the improvements in 2022.
And
we're currently working on some water improvements that we received a grant for last year.
And be able to complete the project then?
Pardon me?
And this would cover the entire project?
Yes. What we have anticipated this time, correct. We've got some piping issues that are very critical. We take on a lot of groundwater inundation, which is not good if you're discharging into the groundwater, and it also taxes the plant on those days when we have, you know, high groundwater issues or storms. It really increases the input to the plant because of that groundwater inundation.
One more follow-up, Mr. Chairman.
Follow-up.
There's an awful lot of green. We're looking at some photographs there. Looks like a lot of green foliage showing around the treatment facility. Don't you have any snow?
That's an old photo, actually, because, well, we don't have any snow, but also all that greenery has been removed, and it is all kind of a rock base around there now. That greenery was kind of a trash collection, so I didn't like the way that looked, so we took care of that issue. But no, we don't have much for snow.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mayor Teske. Good to hear your voice.
Thank you. You too, sir.
With that, are there further questions, comments from members of the committee? Looking here online, not seeing any. With that, I would say thank you very much, Mr. Mayor, for coming in to speak with us here this morning about your project. We appreciate your time.
Thank you for having me.
And with that, Rachel, I believe that we had one more. Do we have somebody who ended up calling in to speak on that project?
I am not sure. I'm not seeing anybody with their hand raised. No.
It was supposed to be the mayor from Darby, Mr. Chairman, but it doesn't look like he ended up joining us today.
Okay. That's no problem. So I believe next up we had our RRGL program overview and update. Lindsay, are you there with us? I believe. Oh, there we go. Good morning.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to have Autumn Coleman do a quick introduction. She's a Resource Development Bureau Chief, and she'd like to talk a little bit about our programs.
That sounds good. Autumn, before I have you start, Kathy, just to check up, I didn't forget anything that we had in the schedule in the in-between the end of our projects and this, correct? Just want to make sure really quick.
No, Mr. Chairman, but that did mark the end of the Treasure State Endowment projects. So, I don't know. We're just kind of transitioning right now between programs.
Okay, that works fine on our end. And with that, Autumn, can you hear us? There you are. Okay, good morning.
Can you hear me, Mr. Chairman?
We can indeed.
Great, thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the Long Range Planning Committee. For the record, my name is Autumn Coleman, C-O-L-E-M-A-N, and I am the Bureau Chief for the Resource Development Bureau within DNRC. Our Bureau includes both the Renewable Resource Grant Program and the Reclamation Development Grants Program, who you'll hear from on Friday for House Bill 7 and House Bill 14. I am a relative newcomer to this program. I've been here just over a year and a half. As I mentioned last week, I originally stood before this committee in 2007 and presented an abandoned mine reclamation project, the Snowshoe Mine in Lincoln County, for RDG grant funds, and then I appeared before the committee several times since. I've gotten to live in both worlds now, the giver and the receiver of these grant funds. And with this unique perspective, I just wanted to take a few moments and share my observations with you guys about the RRGL program and its staff. As you know, the 1975 legislature memorialized the value of Montana's renewable resources by setting aside tax funds from non-renewables to be invested in projects that develop, conserve, or preserve our natural resources. The legislature recognized that these projects not only benefit our economy, but also our state's natural heritage. And we are grateful to present these projects to you for that same consideration. These grant funds help deliver the critical infrastructure to our state that supports both localized and regional economies. The economic impact of RRGL funds must be measured in more than just the engineering and construction jobs during the life of the project. These funds continue to ripple in those communities in terms of access to safe, quality drinking water, reliable wastewater facilities, efficient irrigation infrastructure crucial to our agriculture heritage, improved property values, high quality recreation, and energy conservation. With many of these projects, they are very expensive and they would not be able to be afforded by these communities without these grant funds, or they would raise user rates beyond what some of our small and low income communities can afford. RRGL has a small and a cohesive team who ensure that the grant funds approved by the legislature are delivered to successful projects, on-the-ground projects that can be measured in millions of gallons of water, miles of rivers and streams, thousands of acres, and hundreds of thousands of Montana citizens. We have five staff in the RRGL program that not only deliver the financial assistance in terms of dollars, but also work with the communities to provide the technical support they need for these successful projects. For example, on the large wastewater and drinking water projects, the RRGL staff attends monthly meetings with mayors, town clerks, public works staff, their engineers and consultants, DEQ, and the other funding agencies. These calls are critical to make sure that all the stakeholders are at the table regularly to work through any questions or issues that arise. We actively work with these communities to stay on track with their scope, their schedule, and their budget. These are key components to building these successful projects. The RRGL staff prides themselves on providing outstanding customer service to our communities and local governments. We provide various trainings throughout the year to help people apply for grants as well as meet state and federal requirements. We regularly collaborate with state and federal funding agencies to build funding packages that meet the individual community's needs. The RRGL program fits into the Conservation Resource Development Division, CARD for short. Mark Bostrom is our administrator, and Anna Miller, our deputy administrator and the head of our financial and accounting staff. You'll hear from her in just a moment. Within RRGL, Lindsay Volpe takes the lead on the RRGL program, including the project grants, as you will hear today, as well as coordinating the planning grants. So Lindsay's going to cover the planning grants in greater detail, but I will add one note. These seemingly small awards are absolutely essential for these communities to hire the professional engineering consultants that they need to plan and design these projects that you guys are going to hear this week. The RRGL program includes Sonia Hoagland, who manages the private grant program, Ann Kolzak in Glasgow, who manages the irrigation development grant program, David Larson, who is our program engineer, who manages our emergency grants, and the newest addition to our team is Jory Dyer, who manages our watershed management grant program. We are, of course, supported by our fiscal and administrative staff, who we are eternally grateful. Lindsay will be providing a great amount of detail on the accomplishments of those small grant programs within RRGL, but I just wanted to introduce our staff. The RRGL team managed $11.3 million in grant funds this past biennium. With the passage last legislature of House Bill 6 and House Bill 652, their workload essentially doubled without compromise to the outstanding customer service they provide. To be honest, as a former grant recipient, I didn't know how hard these folks work behind the scenes to make sure that we were successful on our projects. For many communities or irrigation districts, the RRGL staff provides a friendly face or voice that they can call with their questions. We don't always have the answers, but we work hard to make sure they get them to the right person. I will be here for any questions that you have throughout these hearings. But for now, I'd like to turn it over to Anna Miller, who is our deputy administrator, who will break down the funding and revenue aspects of the RRGL program. Following Anna will be Lindsay, who will provide you with the finer points and accomplishments of the RRGL program as a whole. I would like to just thank you guys for allowing me some time today to highlight our RRGL team.
Absolutely. Well, thank you. And do we have Anna on? I'm not seeing Anna on Zoom. Aha! Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Anna Miller, M-I-L-L-E-R, and I work for the Department of Natural Resources, and I have for a long time, over 20 years. And I have the really incredible job of working with Lindsay and Autumn and Heidi and Sonia and all the folks in this program. And I think it's a really great program because it helps your constituents start out on the taking care of their communities. You know, every community has a different story, whether it's a very small town that's facing some problems as far as demographics where they just aren't experiencing any growth. And then there are the communities like, you know, Belgrade and Three Forks and whatnot that are bursting at the seams and having the effects of growth come into their communities and dealing with those. And I think as you heard today, I think it was the mayor from Flaxville talk to you that the people that take care of these communities have other jobs, full-time jobs, and most of this work is done on a part-time basis. But they take the time to make sure that their communities have safe, effective drinking water and wastewater systems to take care of things. And part of that is regulation. They have to make sure that they meet federal standards that the EPA sets. They have to meet standards that the state of Montana takes on. So they have a lot of responsibility. And one of those things that I always think about is that if they don't have decent and clean drinking water, the safety issue. You know, are there kids in schools? Are there folks in the nursing home? Are the businesses, you know, do they have the resources that they need to make sure that they can conduct business and take care of people and make it a desirable place, no matter what your hometown is, to live and stay? So there are a few things in this next couple of days that we'll be talking to you about where we kind of wrap things together. We're going to talk a little bit about rates and charges. The DNRC does a rate survey every other year, and we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about things that we do to facilitate the projects going well. And Autumn talked about that a little bit in that most of the projects that we deal with have multiple funding sources. And they need it to make these projects work and to talk their constituents into moving along and accepting a rate increase because they have to have clean drinking water and wastewater systems that work for them. So, Heidi, do you want to bring up the first slide I'm going to talk about? Okay, this first slide is just talking about where we get our revenues for projects. And if you look at the very bottom, it's the Natural Resources Project account. And that account gets money from several sources. One is the Resource Indemnity Trust. And Resource Indemnity Trust was built to have $100 million in it. It got its funding from resource extraction, all kinds of extraction taxes, oil, gas, all kinds of things. And the interest earnings from that trust come in and put money into the Natural Resource Projects account. We also get money from oil and gas production tax. That money comes into the account. And we get money from the Resource Indemnity Groundwater Assessment Tax, sometimes called RIGWA. And those funding sources come in, and then those are the sources that we usually or have used for House Bill 6. Last session, if you were here, what happened was is that anything that wasn't funded by these resources were funded in House Bill 652. That equivalent this time is House Bill 14, and GO bonds were sold to fund those projects. One of the things that we ask that you consider in this go-round is that you consider allowing us to use fungibility between the funding sources. What may happen to us this time is the Natural Resource Projects account may not get the full revenue that we anticipated. So if you have 80 projects in our list and 1 through 40 were supposed to be funded with natural resource revenues, funding House Bill 6, and then 41 through 80 were supposed to be funded with general obligation bonds. We have the problem in that project number 39 and number 40 may not get funded if those resources or those revenues are short coming into the National Resources Project account. We're going to have maybe a couple projects, maybe more, I don't know, that will not get funded. So what we were asking is some language that helps us move any general obligation bond revenues up so that those five projects can be funded from the top down. And even in getting our projects out and contracted this biennium, we ran into some of that. We can sell GO bonds and we have the money immediately to start conducting business with the projects that were lower ranked. And the projects that were higher ranked, we had to wait until those revenues came in to be able to contract those projects. So we'd certainly like to think, have you think about that as you're working through the process of getting these revenues to the projects. So I just want to put that in front of you, and I'd like to say that the projects that we do are good projects. I would say they rank from the great to the good to some that may have some issues, and we can talk about those as time goes on. If a community invests some money to get a planning grant and come in and study these issues, that's a really good and positive thing, and they need that. Planning grants are just so important in this process because you look at a system, and again, you have part-time people, the mayor, the council people, and the poor public works director that's not only running the water and wastewater system, but they're also running the parks department and the cemetery and helping out with the library and making sure that the sidewalks are cleaned when we have snow and things like that. But that professional expertise that the engineer brings to this is a good thing. Is your water tank too small, or is your water tank just fine, but your distribution system in the water system is full of leaks? And maybe we don't have to touch that water tank, but maybe what we need to do is put meters on and make sure that those pipes are, those distribution systems are tight and solid. So I always like to think about that when we talk to you. So I think enough with the revenue slide. Let's go on to the next slide. Okay, I want to talk to you about the WASAC group. And the WASAC group came about probably at least 20 years ago. And again, what we were experiencing when we were working with these projects is people were using multiple funding sources to pay for projects. And one of the things we wanted to ensure is that there was no double dipping in that bill for engineering was paid with one, you know, RRGL grant and also being paid for with a TSEP grant. We wanted to make sure that there was no problem with things like that. But also we wanted to see how we could facilitate the information so that all the funders are using the same exact information when they move the project forward. And because we have a very talented staff here at NRC, as we do at TSEP, as we have with the DEQ and the engineers that are involved with the State Revolving Fund Program, we said, what can we do to facilitate working with these communities? And so we do have the monthly calls where we make sure every funder is on the call. We make sure that the engineer for the project is on the call. We make sure that the town or the district is on the call. We make sure that their legal counsel is on the call because we're working on things like making sure we have site title opinions so we can make sure if we drop lines in a certain place and those lines have issues, we can get in and work on those lines without being having any issues. We want to make sure that if they adopt rates and charges, they've adopted them according to our Montana annotated code. Everything is fulfilled. We're doing the work of public information and notifying the public what's going on, as well as following all the rules that we have. We want to make sure that we've timed things as far as who's paying for what. Can one program pay for the acquirement of easements and another program pay for the engineering on a project? And I will say one of the most important things in the RRGL program is a lot of times we can start out with that money paying for engineering. That solves the problem of getting things ready to go sooner. And then we can come in with the loan funds, the other grant funds to take care of construction and things like that. So the WASAC group is really important. We've devised a uniform application so that applicants only have to fill out one application, and that can go to the Treasure State Endowment Program, that can come to the Renewable Resource Program, that can come to the State Revolving Fund Program, saving our applicants time and money. And again, it's a benefit to us funders because we have the same basis of information to work on things. So WASAC is another really important component of that. We've developed a uniform tracking sheet, again, so we can all make sure that whatever was paid for, we know where that money went and what it was used for, so that you have confidence as a legislative body and as the governor of the state, this administration, that the money was used for what it was intended. The other thing about these programs that I think is so important is the diversity of the economic driver. We have, you know, the very small construction company, you know, Fred and Son, and they can come in and do a distribution project. And then you have very large projects. And I think we talked a little bit about that with Big Mountain, and Big Mountain is actually going to use or get their wastewater treatment facilities from the city of Whitefish. This year, more than ever, this last fiscal year, we really saw that coming to a head. We've been working with the town of Belgrade, or the city of Belgrade, really, for several years. We started out working on that project over a year ago. We thought the wastewater treatment plant was going to be around $25 million. That grew to $30. That grew to $35 million. And finally, when we bid the project, we were at $43 million for the wastewater treatment, for them to be able to handle the growth in that community and for them to upgrade the things that they need to upgrade. So we're really seeing a very large amount of expense coming with these projects, again, to keep the community safe. And they're not doing it because it's fun. They're doing it because it's required. And these grants, even though you think it's a small amount of money that they may save or whatnot, it's a huge thing. When you think about people's lives, they're paying for their water, for their sewer, for their cell phone, you know, for other things that help them conduct their business and conduct their welfare of their businesses and just livelihoods. So what I hope to do is bring for you information about those, that survey on rates and charges as we work, as we go into next week. We're going to talk about those regional water systems and the small communities that that benefits, because once we have a source of water for folks, then we can take care of many of these small towns' problems, like Flaxville, their nitrates and things, being on a different water source. I'm going to talk to you about the State Revolving Fund Program and how that works and comes into play with all these funders. So at this time, I'd certainly be available for any questions. I believe Lindsay is going to talk to us about the program a little bit more, RRGL, since now we're going to talk about this, the, I guess, broader brush that the Renewable Resource Program has, whereas we're benefiting not only cities and towns, but we're irrigation districts and private users of our system. So with that, I turn it over to Lindsay.
Thank you, Ms. Miller. And we do have at least, excuse me, we do have a couple of questions for Anna Miller. So,
Hey, do you want to do those now or do you want to wait a little bit? Whatever.
Yeah, I think we'll do them right now. Representative
okay.
Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question for Ms. Miller. And Ms. Miller, you can re-refer it or delay it if you wish. But Mr. Chair, Ms. Miller, my question is really, You've talked about sort of the small communities to the large communities, and Belgrade certainly was a very, very big project. But what do the seven urban cities do if they have projects like this? In this list of 76, we really might only have one that's in one of the seven urban centers. So do they go to a different program, or is this money just not significant enough for their projects? Or talk a little bit about that to me.
Certainly, Mr. Chair, Representative Hamilton. The bigger towns have an advantage. They do have more users. They do have, say, a city engineer. They also probably have a chief financial officer on theirs. So it kind of depends upon how they do that. A lot of those can issue debt on their own, issue a bond for the city of Great Falls or the city of Missoula or the city of Billings. They certainly have that capability. Many times those larger urban areas may come into one of these programs where, say, they have a trailer court within their boundaries. And that trailer court may have very low to moderate income folks where their water sewer lines need to be replaced. So it kind of depends upon what the project is that they're doing. I know with the city of Great Falls recently, we did a storm sewer project. It was $1.5 million. And so for them to do all the financial machinations to go out and borrow publicly is a lot of work. And so to borrow $1.5 million from our program just seemed to go a little bit easier. The city of Missoula recently, maybe a year or two ago, bought their city water system. I believe it was in excess of $50 million buy. If they came in and borrowed from our programs, there wouldn't be any money left for anybody else. So they, you know, borrowed and went out publicly and issued debt. So it kind of depends upon the type of project and what they see as qualifying or not qualifying for the programs. I'd like to say we have a really good group of construction companies that work in Montana, and a lot of those people do work, so they're familiar with the communities, they're familiar with what's going on. We have a lot of really good engineers in the state that know what would qualify and rank well and what wouldn't qualify for. And so, you know, even those folks are looking at that and saying, here's the way, community, we think you should move on this, because we think this will give you the benefit that you need to move the project forward.
Thank you. That helps.
Thank you, Ms. Miller. And if you could just stay there a minute. I believe it was the last project that was presented just before we went into this section. We had the, I believe it was the mayor from Sunburst that had a project there, and also mentioned that they were not connected with that big Northern Montana water project, although they wanted to be. Somehow they were not, but they wanted to be. So is there something they can do to get connected? It evidently blocks them from one of the sources of application of things, and they're using water wells, where I believe that Northern Water Project, if I remember right, pulls water out of, Tiber. Tiber Lake, yes. So, and that is
Mr. Vice Chair, members of the committee, that's absolutely right. And in fact, the pipeline is done going from Shelby up north to Oilmont, Nine Mile Water and Sewer District, and Sweetgrass. And in fact, that was one of the things that we had some real heartburn over, to know, yes, they could be connected to that North Central water system. We would have to do a change of place and use, but that would be taken care of by the North Central Regional Water System, and then they could be connected. So our evaluation is that maybe, you know, they could look at some other things, like maybe, you know, putting in meters and fixing lines, because I think the work to get connected to the North Central Regional Water System, that could happen on a fairly fast basis if that's what they proceeded and wanted to do.
Okay, so
and we'll have that when we talk about regional water. We can show you that that map of the regional water system and kind of explain that a little bit more in depth.
You will be later.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, and then, I guess, how might we, if they do want to, and the mayor stood here and spoke to us and said they wanted to be connected to that, how does what do they need to do? Are you working with them or someone in the office working with them that can explore that further?
Absolutely. I mean, we could put the sideboards on that we think, you know, they might use the funding for something else, like meters, like fixing lines, that type of thing.
Okay. Thank you very much. Any questions from anyone that's watching online, members of the committee? Senator White, and I guess Representative Hamilton has one more question here, and then if there's anybody online, we'll go to them. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chair. Another question from Ms. Miller. And this one, once again, you can push it into another time period if you need to, but this one is sort of the weighting of need. And when I look at some of these communities and see how little other resources they have available, you know, property values and property taxes are quite low, I think, well, okay, that makes sense. But then I'm thinking of one project in particular that has some pipelines running through the county, which means they have enormous property tax collections. And I see that as sort of a different level of need. So I guess that's what I'm wondering is the weighting of need and how is that judged between these projects?
You know, different programs have different evaluations in the weight of need. The Treasure State Endowment Program looks at individual rates and charges. They look at median household income. And then you have the Renewable Resource Program, which talks about, you know, benefit, natural resource benefit. And I think Lindsay will talk a little bit more about that. You know, that's kind of a tough one. And I just think because we work with local governments a lot and see the demand placed on local governments to do everything from, you know, make sure everybody's, you know, healthy and safe with their water, run their businesses, do the things that they have to do. I don't know how you judge that. I mean, we've tried to set up these parameters, and I would say pretty much everybody does need this help because it's the other thing coming down the line that they have to fix. One of the things we're seeing is these things just wear out. And so there's always the next replacement and there's always the next rule about lead and copper and nitrates and things like that coming down the pipe to say, now you have to fix your system to do X, Y, and Z. So we'll get into that a little bit more. Some of that is a judgment call, I think, for the legislative body. That's why we bring these to you folks. But I think the local governments really struggle with all of the things that they are asked to do. So I don't know that I have a good answer for you. But if they qualify, here are the rules that we have set, then we feel like we've got to bring them in and put them before you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Hamilton. Do we have any further questions, comments from members of the committee? Seeing none, I think we're going to move along.
Okay, are we ready for Lindsay then to go ahead and start?
I believe we are, Anna. Thank you.
Good morning, Chairman Hopkins and members of the Long Range Planning Committee. Again, for the record, my name is Lindsay Bolpe, and I manage the Renewable Resource Grant and Loan Program at the DNRC. So I want to thank Anna and Autumn for going over our programs a little bit, and I want to mention to you that you should have a few handouts that Anna would have gone over. So I think that blue spreadsheet with the Resource Indemnity Trust, like the big funding flow chart, you should have a copy of that. I know that probably was hard to see on the PowerPoint. We also sent over a brochure about the WASAC group. So you should have some information on what we do and our programs. So if you have any questions or didn't get to see those on the screen, I hope you have a copy, or I think they should be on that virtual binder for your in your materials section. Am I coming through okay?
You are indeed. Thank you.
Great. Thank you.
Okay, so yesterday I gave you a brief presentation on what our programs in House Bill 6 and 14 do for the RGL program. And today we finished with presentations on the joint projects between TSEP and RGL, which are both in House Bill 6 and House Bill 14. I'd like to thank TSEP for coordinating those project presentations and being such a great partner on those projects. Next week, we'll hear from applicants with only RGL funding requests. Those applicants are coming to us from wastewater or dam, what we call other or like restoration projects, and then we'll end with irrigation projects. Those projects might only seek funding from RGL program due to their project types or just the limited amount of other grant funding for the work that they're doing. So next slide. So like most people, when we think of Montana, we think of endless adventures and hardworking communities and families. At more than 147,000 square miles, Montana is the fourth largest state in the United States. It is also one of the most naturally diverse. Montana is fortunate to have programs like TSEP and RGL to support pristine resources, ranching communities, small towns, and economic hubs. Next slide. Thank you. Oh, so Anna mentioned that there's some, well, first of all, let me back up. So we did give you a copy of the RGL budget book, and that's also available online too. And I believe you've been looking through it, referencing pages for our projects. This budget book also has information about our program, our ranking criteria. We talk about our reports on past biennium program, past biennium projects, and our subgrant programs. We also have an application that we have available for our projects that talks about our mission and our criteria and our ranking, and you should also have a copy of this. And Anna did mention the uniform application, which is used by public facility projects across the state as a centralized or uniform application to apply to these programs. If applicants used this for the TSEP and RGL projects, then they would have to also submit the supplement to provide information that's required only for the RGL program. So we really try to work with our applicants to make this as easy as process as it can be, and also to coordinate with other agencies. And like Anna mentioned, that was coordinated through that WASAC group. Next slide. Okay, so numerous public facility projects, including drinking water, wastewater, and solid waste development and improvement projects, have received funding through this program. You can see other renewable resource projects that have been funded that include irrigation, dam, water conservation, and forest enhancement. Typically, our program represents infrastructure and renewable resources equally. You can see this chart that's in the budget book that shows a breakout of project types and percentages of applications received. Water and wastewater projects combined equal 45% of projects, whereas irrigation is 42%. And then you can see the breakout of the sub-applications for studies and other types and dam projects. Eligible applicants include political divisions, subdivisions of the state, local and tribal governments, including state agencies and universities, counties, incorporated cities and towns, conservation districts, irrigation districts, water, sewer, solid waste districts, and tribes. Our grants are limited to $125,000 per applicant, and that request, unlike TSEP, is based on the project need. And sometimes you'll see some that come in a little bit under $125,000. Depending on the application. Sometimes irrigation districts don't need the full $125,000 or maybe some of the other projects. Most of the time you'll see that full amount requested. Applications are due usually on May 15th of even numbered years, but this year we extended our deadline to accommodate any restrictions people might have had on coordinating or providing information due to COVID restrictions. Next slide. So you should also have a handout of this map, and it's also available in our budget book. It's simply a representation of the applications received this biennium. We also show that we get applications from all over the state. So we cover most corners, resources. We kind of do it all. We're really flexible, and we try to hit projects or hit those people working on projects that are going to be bringing applications forward that are for resource benefits. It's the applications compete a competitive ranking process based on the degree to which the proposed project is likely to meet the program purpose. So I'll read the purpose to you here real quick. So the purpose of the program is to further the state's policies set forth in 85.1-101 regarding the conservation, development, and beneficial use of water resources, and to invest in renewable natural resource projects that will preserve for the citizens of Montana the economic and other benefits of the state's natural heritage. So that goes back to my first slide showing the different resources that our state is so valued for, and people like me have moved to the state to raise their family and have a healthy life. So each application in our program is scored based on renewable resource benefits. So this is a major part of our ranking criteria. It's where you get the most points, and that's why you see the differentiation of projects. Like our first project might not be the first project on TSEP list because we're looking for people. We're looking for projects that will do the most for resources. And that process is scored by our DNRC staff. We also evaluate projects on public benefits. That's also done by our staff. And then we will contract between 15 and 20 consultants, depending on the number of applications and the type of applications we receive, to evaluate those technical feasibilities and project requirements that we just don't have the ability to do. We're a small group of grant managers, and we really want that expertise to know that we're making the best technical decisions for resources in Montana. Each application will be reviewed for clarity and potential issues for water rights and the sage-grouse program by DNRC, and then we also have other secondary reviewers from other agencies, or maybe we just needed a extra check on some aspect of the application, and we'll have a secondary reviewer. So our reviews are very thorough. There's lots of levels and steps and backgrounds involved in our application review process, and I can provide more information on that if you want to look at our scoring, or I can maybe if you need some additional information. But that's, you know, it's a pretty thorough process, and I think we really focus on those resources to bring you this diverse set of applications to cover projects from all across the state, all corners. Next slide. This year, to help you understand some aspects of what we funded and how our program might deliver funding to counties, our agency has helped us put together a dashboard, and it's on our website, and it's interactive. It's a new map and a new feature that I haven't really had a lot of time to play with, basically. But if you look, if I can do an interactive demonstration, but this is not interactive. You can look at all the data that's on here, and it really shows the impact of the Long Range Planning Committee and legislature and how they give funding to counties and diverse projects from across the state. Next slide. Together, House Bill 6 and 14 have a tremendous impact to our economy. The funding summary spreadsheet that you should also have a copy of in the past is called our Hope Table. It's what applications have submitted with the hopes to get funded. So it shows all the proposed funding. And this is something I would love to have in the room with me right now on a huge spreadsheet posted on the wall so you can see how the funding looks throughout the state. This is really exciting to show the financial impacts. And on this slide, I only have a summary. I just show the projects and then a summary, but you should have a full handout that shows where the funding is coming from and how the project funding will be impacted and delivered to our economy. So in House Bill 6, match funding for projects for the RGL projects is over $77 million. And House Bill 14 match funding for RGL projects is over $43 million. By funding these projects, you help bring $121 million through job creation, economic stability, federal funding, and sustained resource benefits. These resources will be carried through to generations. Hopefully my children will still be here and they'll be able to enjoy the benefits of this work that all these applicants are putting forward. This is the most exciting part of the job. I'm so proud to be able to do this and work with the applicants and help this legacy go forward.
And Lindsay, if I could go ahead and pause you for a second, it looks like we have some questions from members of the committee, if you don't mind. With that, Vice Chair Cuff.
Yeah, I just want to make sure I understood this chart. So for, I guess we're saying $6 million or $10 million, less than $10 million funding, if it's agreed to, it provided through House Bill 6 and House Bill 14, that leverages into matching funds of $121 million. Is that what you're saying?
Vice Chair Cuff, that is correct.
That's out of this year. Well, I suppose some of it may have already be there or coming in future also. Is that correct?
Vice Chair Cuff, that is correct. I don't know if you have the handout of the spreadsheet in front of you, but if you're not, I can provide it to you.
Would that be 2020 Renewable Resource Grant and Loan Program proposed project funding as entered into June 2020?
Mr. Cuff, that's correct.
Yeah, no, we've got it right here. Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you for your question. That's a great aspect to highlight. I overlooked that. So the $9.47 million that's being proposed for approval through House Bill 6 and House Bill 14 will leverage that total amount of match funding, possibly this biennium or throughout the next, as the project proceeds. So as over the life of the project, that's the amount of money that should be secured and potentially brought to our economy through jobs, creations, and other economic stability efforts.
And with that, I'm not seeing any other questions from members of the committee, so I think we're good to move along. Thank you, Lindsay.
So some people might say, why does our program fund water and sewer projects if we're a renewable resource program? And that's something I want to just tie into the TESA projects that we saw earlier. So these funds improve community infrastructure when the grant or loan contributes to the beneficial use or protection of a resource. So if you look at these big projects, they do a lot for our resources, and they could do just as much as a resource-specific project, and sometimes those resource-specific projects can do more than some of our projects. It just depends on the type of project that's being proposed. So an example is if you looked at the highest ranked grant in House Bill 6, page 22, well, it's a higher rank. I'm sorry, I don't have the rank in front of me, but it's on page 22 of your budget book. It contributes to Gardner's efforts to improve their wastewater system, thereby protecting groundwater and water quality in the Yellowstone River. This project will enable tourism and development to move forward. And I know that this is a complicated project, but it just highlights that connection to such a significant resource. By working on this wastewater project, system project, it will improve statewide benefits to resources. The Lockwood project, heard yesterday, is also ranked high in the RGL list as project number 8 or page 28 in your budget book, and contributes to Lockwood's effort to improve their water treatment system and remove failing on-site treatment and remove the failing on-site treatment system. This project will contribute to reduce nutrients in groundwater and surface water in the Yellowstone River area of Billings. Lockwood has multiple phases of their project that they're working on to improve resources in the Yellowstone River, and also they're working on their water project. So I just wanted to highlight Lockwood a little bit and the work that they're doing for resources. Next slide. So we've talked about a little bit about the work that we've done in the past, and I just wanted to show this map showing the previous application cycles from 2018 and 2020, and also some of the planning grants. I know you have this in front of you or as a handout, but I just wanted to put it up to show you the what else we fund or have funded, I'm sorry, in past bienniums. Next slide. So besides project grants, we do have funding proposed in House Bill 6 for other programs. We have emergency grants. We have planning grants. So emergency grants are $100,000. Planning grants in the past were $800,000, but they've been adjusted to $1.1 million. We have irrigation development grants, and those are $300,000. Watershed management grants are a little new program, but not so new anymore. They're a very successful program for watershed activities in the state, and those are $300,000. We also have a private grant program for $75,000. So in addition to our private grant programs, our House Bill 6 manages a lot of grant funding throughout the state. These programs are summarized in the budget book, Volume 6, and I will provide a brief overview of the programs and can provide more information from these program managers if needed. So this is just a little overview summary of the work that we've done since the last biennium also. So there's a lot of information on this slide. Next slide. Our emergency grants are an essential component to some of the work we do, and we also work with TSEP on getting emergencies funded. So the emergencies need to pose an immediate threat, so maybe like a dam fails, or there's people don't have clean drinking water and they have to get boil order makes them have bottled water. They might have any other delays that are unexpected and are just they can't wait till the next biennium. So it's only available to government entities, and you can find it on page 107 of Volume 6.
So could you go back the slide? I couldn't see the identification. Where that is that a project?
This is on our website, and I don't know. Sorry, Vice Chair Cuff. This is on our website, and this was an actual emergency grant project. I don't know which biennium it was. Unfortunately, Bob Fisher, our past engineer, he managed that, and I can find that out for you if you're interested.
Well, no, I'd be interested if it was current. I don't really care about history.
Okay, it's history.
Thank you.
Okay, so our irrigation grant development grant program is a smaller sub-grant program, but it's done a lot of work, and it's in its 20th year. So the irrigation development grant program assists producers with projects that grow high-value crops. This is a big part of our Montana economy, and this helps get them funding to continue that development. You can see that there was a high number of acres developed and sustained, and there's a few, I can't read it, but there's a few, sorry, there's a few, just hang on a second. There we go. So there's over 37,000 acres of new irrigation, 300,000 acres of sustained irrigation. Grants are small, but they have a big impact to our economy, mostly because of those high-value crops and the work that those irrigators are doing in Montana. So you can find that information on page 105 of the budget book. And grants are something that I feel are the most critical, and I think both the TSEP and the RGO program, these are those planning activities that lead to these project grants. Some applicants might need two bienniums to pull all the planning information and technical items together that require them to submit applications. So these applications that you see before you for consideration today could essentially be 6 years in planning and leveraging of funding and technical and other resources that are behind the scenes that we don't see. So without this funding, these 81 grants assessed biennium, our projects would not be as successful as they were. I feel like we could double this amount and still see, please don't double it, because that's a lot of work. But I know that the demand is so high that we could get those planning grants out to Montana and cover a lot of ground and work and speed some projects up, essentially. I know that these small communities, like Anna had mentioned, have part-time staff. They don't have technical resources. They need to spend the outreach. They might not know how to hold a public meeting. They might not have all the resources that these skilled engineers in Montana and consultants provide. And that comes at a cost. So what does that mean to us? And I think that is our highest value in our program, getting those resources to those communities, to those districts, so they can have those planning and technical services. So to me, this is where my focus is on our program. So thank you for considering planning grants. You can find it on page 111 of volume 6. So here's one of our newer programs. You might have heard from the watershed management grants in the past, but these programs provide funding to watershed groups and smaller entities to help them get that community investment for watershed improvements. It results in environmental community economic benefits. And last biennium, we had 7 local groups awarded, but you can see that the total request was from over 28 groups for that over $700,000. And I don't know if we'll talk about, Anna will continue her conversation about our funding, but some of these, I think, were at the point of putting our budget book together. We're a little delayed because of our funding. And I don't know if that conversation will be continued, but it wasn't for lack of effort or it wasn't a lack of need. So these help build that capacity and planning for watershed related activities. And I think it's a pretty unique program in Montana as far as funding goes. And you won't find funding like this available to these groups otherwise. Okay, so we have a private grant program also, and this one I think is a smaller grant program. Also, it's $75,000, and it helps funding for failing septic systems and other water projects. So this grant program pays up to $5,000 or 25% of project costs, or whichever is least. So this is important to those water quality resources and the fact that it's protecting failing septic systems and other private issues that are required by county health officials. So we covered that, Anna. And look, that's it. I just wanted to give you a brief overview of what we do. I know that's not a lot of information and might have been skimmed over some details you'd like to have heard, but if you need something, I'm happy to discuss anything with you tomorrow on Monday when we continue our conversation on irrigation grants. And I know that Anna and Otto, myself, and Kathy is, I think, she's our honorary RGL member. So any of us will be happy to discuss the program and the sub-grant programs with you.
Thank you very much. We do have a question here right now, Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chair. Lindsay, I'm wondering if you could walk through that flow chart a little bit more. I think Ms. Miller hit it at a very high level, and I guess I'm a little bit more curious about sort of the parts of it. And the arrows coming from the indemnity trust interest into these accounts, and then others coming from the other side. It needs more explanation for me, please.
Vice Chair Cuff, Representative Hamilton, I really like to defer that to Anna Miller because all those arrows are confusing to me too, if that's okay.
Thank you.
You can do high level and low level.
What was that again?
This is Anna. I'm going to talk to you about that funding chart. There isn't any, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Anna Miller again from the DNRC, there isn't any rhyme or reason why some things are on one side and some things are on the other side. I think when we set this chart up, we just did it so we could fit things on there. The Resource Indemnity Trust item, which is on the left-hand side, is, again, this $100 million trust. It was originally funded with extraction taxes on our minerals. That Resource Indemnity Trust sits at $100 million balance. And interest from that trust then goes to a couple places. It goes to the Natural Resource Projects account, and it also goes with the Natural Resources Operating account. Now, one of the things that I think when it was originally set up, I think they thought that, you know, interest earnings would continue to climb. We'd always have a certain amount of interest earnings. Well, at this time, we're sitting at unprecedented low interest rates as far as that trust. I think part of it is in long-term investments. Some of it is in short-term. But the makeup of that trust may or may not yield the interest earnings that we thought 2 years ago when we set, or when you folks set the revenue estimates. On the other side of that, you've got the Resource Indemnity Groundwater Assessment Tax, and a certain part of that tax, 50%, goes to the Natural Resources Project account. And then, and this is on the right-hand side that I'm talking about, and then you've got the Oil and Gas Production Tax, and we get 2.16% of that money coming in. And then you look at the box below it, and that represents the Natural Resource Operations account. That gets 7% of the metalliferous mine tax. So as time has gone on, these charts were much simpler, I'm going to say 20 years from now, but as there was more need and you had certain resource production up, like, you know, one of the things I looked at was what did we have? The oil and gas boom in eastern Montana, say 7 or 8 years ago. Well, all of a sudden, you had this influx of funds from resource production, oil and gas production, things like that. And there was more need for water, sewer, different things that agencies had to take on, DEQ, DNRC, things like that. Well, over time, those things ebb and flow. We see that especially in coal tax resources and what coal tax production is doing. Right now, I believe at one time we had 10 coal tax production companies in the state of Montana. I think right now we know that that coal tax production, I think 9 of those companies are in bankruptcy. You have the change of coal strips 1, 2, 3, and 4 going offline. So a place where we used to get coal tax revenues, that revenue is just changing. It's not going to be there in the foreseeable future as to what happens. So this chart just is here to give you a representation of where money is flowing into this account. And then again, Natural Resource Projects account is the account that we use to fund the projects that usually are in House Bill 6. And again, when we budget for those projects, we assume revenue is coming in over the 2-year period. So if you pass House Bill 6, we have to start up at the top and start with, say, the first 5 projects. Okay, we've got money in there. We can contract with those. We can start the work. And then we can do, you know, the next projects and the next projects and the next projects. So the projects that are at the end of the list in House Bill 6, we probably won't be contracting with those folks until later in the biennium because that revenue hasn't come in. And if that revenue is short, we may not be able to contract with those folks at all. So I don't know, Representative Hamilton, if that helps you with your question or not.
Representative Hamilton has a question right now.
A follow-up, please, Mr. Vice Chair. So thank you, Ms. Miller. I think we're almost there, if I can just ask one more question, and that is, for our purposes of our RGL, the white boxes and the blue lines mean nothing. It's really just the yellow box and the red dotted lines that are important to our RGL.
Yes. Yes, exactly. But we wanted to make sure that we, you know, showed you that those other, just like that resource indemnity groundwater assessment tax, it is split. In some cases, it's a percentage of what comes in. In some places, it's a dollar amount that goes into there. So, yes, we're just trying to impart information to you about what those different taxes bring into the different programs.
Actually, one more follow-up, Mr. Chair.
One follow-up.
Mr. Vice Chair and Ms. Miller, then can you just give us a short definition, like on the Natural Resource Operations Fund, the excess interest earnings? What is there any such thing anymore? What is excess interest earnings?
Well, I think you're right. You know, what the plan is in resource indemnity trust in interest earnings, the first 6.4 goes to natural resource projects. If there was excess earnings, there would be something that would be flowing into the natural resource operations account. I very much doubt in this environment that there is any excess earnings, but if there were, you know, interest rates jumped up to 5%, there would be some excess earnings then, and those excess earnings would go then to that natural resources operations account.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, and Anna Miller, I just wanted to ask first, he commented on the yellow boxes, but the blue lines feeding the other boxes, I'm trying to find the source for those. I guess part of it is resource indemnity. Maybe that's a big part. It's the main part except for the orphan share. Okay, so resource indemnity and groundwater assessment tax. Will you explain those one time, Anna?
Sure. Okay, the resource indemnity trust, again, had resource production taxes, coal, gas, palladium, different things, and those taxes were collected and they were put into that resource indemnity trust. It sits at $100 million. So if you look above and below it, there are blue lines that divvy up the interest earnings of that account. For instance, the environmental contingency account gets $175,000 a year. The future fisheries gets $1 million a year. Groundwater assessment gets $600,000 a year. And then oil and gas mitigation gets the $650,000 and then the $500,000. And then also you have, again, you know, a certain amount of money, $6.4 million going to natural resource projects. If there's any excess earnings over that amount, 9% of that goes to the Environmental Quality Protection Fund. 26% of it would go to hazardous waste CERCLA account. And 65% of that would go to natural resources operating. So let's say the natural resources indemnity trust gets in $10 million a year normally, and we had a really good year, and now we got $11 million. So that, you know, $10 million would go to these places where it should go, and then that $1 million that's left would be divvied up among some other accounts. So some years they get money, some years they don't get money. So that's the Resource Indemnity Trust. That's where they get their funds. The Resource Indemnity Groundwater Assessment Tax, and I may have to have Kathy help me with that one. The RGWA tax, oh, I see Kathy disappeared. I would have to research that.
Yeah, who pays that tax? Who pays that tax? What's it paid for?
And Autumn, do you know where the RGWA tax comes from? Maybe you want to speak to that.
I was actually going to say we should kick it to Kathy.
That's okay.
Kathy's back.
Oh, Kathy's back on. Kathy, do you know where the RGWA tax actually comes from?
Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry. I've got a little bit of background noise going on in my house right now. the resource indemnity groundwater assessment tax is a tax on mineral extraction, including coal. Coal is probably its biggest source of revenues. And of course, you know, I think we're all aware of what's going on with coal right now. I don't know how good that is going to be as a source of income in the future, but that's basically what it is.
Okay, primarily on groundwater involved with coal mining. That was a question.
I think Senator Chairman, I'm not sure we got it.
Did I miss your question?
Yeah, that the groundwater assessment tax is primarily paid by coal mining operations.
Mr. Chairman, yes, that's correct. So it's kind of an additional type of a tax on coal. Coal is the primary industry that's forced in that, but other mineral extraction is included and does pay that tax.
Okay. Very good. Our regular chairman is back now.
Thank you very much. Do we have any more questions from members? Okay. With that, I think that we are good to keep moving.
Okay, I'm just checking here. Autumn or Lindsay, do we have anything more to discuss on the program?
Oh, I think it's Kathy next.
Okay, and I don't know if Kathy has anything more for us.
Yeah, I believe the next thing that we had up was a little bit of an overview from Kathy. Is that correct?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. And again, I've got a little bit of background noise going on, and I hope it's not going to be too bad. How do I sound? Can you guys hear background noise?
We can hear.
It shouldn't last very long, and I'm sorry. It makes it a little difficult for me to hear.
That's no problem. Kathy, before we have you start off really fast, I think I see a hand raised here on Zoom. So let's go ahead and check what that do we have. There, Laura, how are you doing?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. Good. Thank you. Is this the right time? I was going to speak in support of the RRGL programs.
Did you have general proponent testimony for RRGL or specific to a project?
Just specifically for the Irrigation Development Grant Program.
All right, that looks like on the committee side, that works fine for us. Go right ahead, please.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Laura Nolan. That's Nowlin. I'm the coordinator for the Musselshell Watershed Coalition. We would like to speak in support of the RRGL program as a whole, but specifically I'm here to speak for the Irrigation Development Grant Program. Several of our member conservation districts and water user associations have utilized this funding source. This program is the only source dedicated to irrigation development or sustainment. Funding for sustainment has been important for our members, such as the Delphia Millstone Canal Users Association, which is neither a federal nor a state project, and therefore sources for assistance are very limited. The Musselshell River has experienced 100-year floods 3 times since 2011 and had sustained 10-year flood levels for 3 months in 2018. This flooding had profound impacts on the entire river system and heavily impacted water user associations and individual irrigators. They turned to the IDG program and received assistance for collaborative projects such as LIDAR mapping and creating best management practices for irrigation and within the Musselshell River corridor itself, as well as projects like providing professional on-site recommendations for flood recovery actions and completing infrastructure assessments for determining canal efficiency. It's hard to describe the helpless feeling of watching your very expensive critical infrastructure wash away because high water for 3 months eroded your bank by 300 feet. These unpredictable events leave entire communities devastated, both economically and psychologically. And the funding provided by IDG is one piece of rebuilding businesses, organizations, and communities, and is deeply appreciated. Thank you.
Thank you, Laura. We appreciate it. And while we are on the topic, I do believe that we might have one individual waiting out in the hallways to give general proponent testimony as well while I am butchering our daily agenda. I figure I might as well try to keep at least this part of it concise and together. So with that, we'll go ahead and have our other piece of general proponent testimony for RGL before we wrap into our breakdown from Kathy. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, Clayton Elliott, ELLIOTT. I'm here today representing Montana Trout Unlimited and National Trout Unlimited. Wanted to stand up generally and support the RRGO program, House Bill 6. There's a number of projects, both in past bienniums that have been funded, some of the restoration work that we do on the ground with partners and communities. There are a number of projects this year in this biennium that we would certainly love to express our support, whether it's from the Rattlesnake up to the Milk River and some of the work we've been doing on St. Mary's Diversion and things like that. So there's a number of projects in there, but I'm going to be brief, and I just wanted to support the program overall. And certainly if folks have specific concerns about projects or if or what we might be involved in some of them, I'm in the hallway and you know where to find me. So just thank you for the opportunity today.
Excellent. Well, thank you. And thank you, Laura, for coming in and providing us with testimony. We appreciate your time. I am not seeing anybody else online, nor am I aware of anybody else out in the hallway who is looking to offer general proponent or opponent testimony, but we'll call one more time for the heck of it here. If there is anybody, go ahead and raise your hand at this time. And seeing none, Kathy, I believe that we are good to go now. I apologize for that. And it looks, there we go.
Let me apologize, Mr. Chairman, for just for a little bit, I had something going on that made it hard to hear and respond. So I just was going to go ahead and share my screen and do just show you the budget analysis for the Renewable Resource Grant and Loan Program. But there's a couple things that while I'm here on the first page of our virtual binder that I wanted to draw your attention to. For those of you who are getting on the meetings on Zoom, I have been posting your daily agenda on the first page, the page that you default into. For this program. And again, I just today had them start putting a date on it so you know when this agenda applies to. And so for those of you who are on Zoom, you'll be able to find that there. We're working with the right now with the Renewable Resource Grant and Loan Program, and we're focused on grants, and you can find those in your project map if you click on RRGL for the program name. You will see that RRGL is funded with both House Bill 14 and House Bill 6. So when you pick your program, it'll bring up the bills they're involved with and where the appropriations are made. The size of the dot is totally related to the total project cost. And in relation to the total budgetary costs of the RRGL program, a lot of the additional costs that for RRGL grant projects, is really associated with the TSEP program. So I was really glad to hear Lindsay give you the stats on what this program in and of itself assuming House Bill 6 and House Bill 14 are both passed, will leverage, because this number tends to be on budget down here in the table, tends to be a little bit inaccurate, since I could only put the cost shares, the other funding sources, into one program. It would have made things look gigantic if I would have put it in two. So, excuse me, Mr. Chairman. So every time I go back, I get kicked out of this. while I'm here, I'm going to go over to our overall Section F materials, and I'm going to give a little bit of a plug for a matrix that Representative Hamilton, in his work during the interim, was working on. I'm not sure if I'm going to have to. Can you see the matrix, everyone?
We can indeed, Kathy. Thank you. Okay. Yeah, enlarging it helps. Thank you.
Yeah. And you probably won't be able to read it here very well, but I would encourage you to go in and look at it. And I'm wondering, Representative Hamilton, would you like to describe this matrix?
Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think I'm going to defer to Kathy, because this is really Kathy's work, something that she did back in 2013, and sort of got put in the back corner of the closet somewhere, and we pulled it back out. So I only had the idea to pull it out. Kathy did all the work. So, Kathy, I'll give it to you.
Representative Hamilton, are you saying that you did not put this chart together by hand?
I must confess that Kathy did all the work, as I already said.
All right. Well, I guess we will turn it over to Kathy then.
Yeah, and he's going to make me do all the work now, too. But that's fine. Okay, so this chart is really something that you find a very similar chart for WASAC, but this particular chart matrix actually includes some different kind of items of information, and it goes beyond just water and wastewater funding sources, although that's really the primary kind of focus of this was local government infrastructure funding. The first section of this map goes through those funds that are provided by the state. And so, for example, you can see Treasure State Endowment Program. It gives you a little bit of information about the program itself. Also talks to you and gives you some information about its funding source, tells you what type of funding it is, if it's a grant. We also have loans in this workbook and or this matrix. And then it gives you a reference to the types of projects that are funded through the program. Tells you what bill you find it in, and this session we just got done looking at House Bill 11. Tells you the 2021 biennium appropriation. So last session's appropriation. It kind of gives you that level of detail for a number of the projects the number of the programs. And as you scroll through here, you'll see some of the programs we're not working with, like the coal board grants. Those are appropriated in House Bill 2. And we've got, you know, you're about to hear the renewable resource grants and the renewable resource loans. Also gives you some information about road funding, because this is meant to cover all types of infrastructure. So road funding tells you a little bit about some of those programs that you've been asking about, as we heard TCEP, the CDBG program, Community Development Block Grants, and various other programs that are administered by the Department of Commerce. And these are federal programs administered by the Department of Commerce. And so as you scroll down, you'll find a lot of references. We separated out those different programs that are federal funding programs, but we wanted to let you know that those are out there, and we try to give you a little bit of a description. We will be continuing through time to work on building this up and refreshing with new federal programs as they come around. And you know, trying to keep updated on that. So I am going to stop screen sharing that item. And
Kathy?
I'm going to go back.
Really fast here before we continue on. It looks like we have at least one question here in the room for you with that, Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mine's not exactly a question. I just wanted to add a little bit to what Kathy was talking about there. We really did want to use this, not so much for this committee, but the subcommittee that we were working on this summer was designed to talk about local government state budget interactions. And it became apparent that nobody really knew where all of these infrastructure programs were. Where's the local money? Where's the state money coming down to the local side? And so what we wanted was an education tool. And originally my thought was, you know, we could get this all on one piece of paper. And then pretty soon Kathy, through all our work, realized that we can't get it on one piece of paper. But it was my hope and my recommendation to the Legislative Finance Council that we would hand this out at the beginning of each session to all legislators to remind them that it's there, and then tell them where it is and so forth. And we weren't successful with that this orientation because of COVID and various other things, but that was the purpose of this. And then we originally were going to just go down through the programs that the legislature could either affect with their vote or no vote, or the programs that were statutorily appropriated, where we could take some kind of affirmative action to change that if we chose. And then the final page really was intended to be saying, yep, there's more out there still that local government could get to, but we as the legislature can't affect those programs. So that was sort of our theory here, and Kathy did a terrific job and really boiled this down to some just the key points where it seems like anybody, even people not on this committee, could get a pretty fair idea of what's going on out there in infrastructure.
Thank you, Representative Hamilton. And yeah, I know that we've ran into a couple of problems here with our COVID session happening during our COVID year, and one of them has been, you know, there was a lot of great trainings in 2019 that we were able to set up that just because of the way the year works, doesn't really work this time around. But hopefully here, as we get into future sessions, this chart, as well as our regular financial breakdown training sessions, can start back up, because I felt that they were really beneficial, and I like that chart quite a bit. With that, Kathy, you want to go ahead and continue? Representative Hamilton first.
I would like to propose, Mr. Chair, that perhaps you would like to frame this one and put it in your house right next to the coal trust one.
Representative Hamilton, it's funny because I've already asked for a blown-up version of it. Maybe not to be framed. I'm not the best at picking out frames necessarily, but yeah, it will actually be hanging up right next to coal severance tax pipeline. So with that, Kathy, would you like to continue?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So now I'm going into the Renewable Resource Grant and Loan Program page. And we can look at their budget analysis. So the LFD budget analysis is under tab 5. You should have this in your binders for those of you who have binders in front of you. So it's just the exact same thing. I'm going to blow it up here so you can see. Lindsay and Anna did a remarkable job, amazing job of just describing their program. I'm not going to talk too much about that. Just to let you know that you could find the statutory reference always in this budget analysis if you want to look it up in statute. Also has the criteria that are used for ranking the grants are always listed in your budget analysis. I've got the the comparison to, I'm going to try to blow it up a little bit more even for you. Comparison to last session. Last session's appropriated budget. So actually this program is just slightly less appropriations than 2 years ago. And so the request is just a little bit less. It's actually two projects more, but less funding. This program, this table includes the loan program. And the loan program has got a big amount in it, $78.6 million. And we're going to be talking about that, I believe, on Thursday. So I'm not going to be talking about the loan program today. I am talking about House Bill 6 and House Bill 14, where there are $9.2 million of appropriations for the specific project grants. And then there's another $1.8 million of appropriations for those other grants that Lindsay mentioned. Those would be project planning grants, emergency grants, the irrigation grants, and so forth. I've got a list starting at the bottom of F24. I'm sorry, I am on page F24. I think I forgot to mention that. But we've got a list of the various appropriations that are included in House Bill 6, along with the additional appropriation in House Bill 14. And there you see the big appropriation in House Bill 8, which we'll talk about later. We do, in all these budget analysis, we have a link to the executive budget volume that you have in front of you. So if you ever need to find that, this is a place where you can get into that real quick. And Mr. Chairman, I'm going to go back and go to the funding, which is on a different page. For this program, and the Reclamation Grant Program are both funded.
Yes. Can you hear us? Sorry about that. Going to need to cut you off again. We got a question here in the committee room for you in this section. Vice Chairkoff.
Yeah, Kathy, the loan program you're talking about, is that through House Bill 8?
Yes, Mr. Chairman and Senator Cuff.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman. Then also a question on before you scroll down so far, there was the general obligation bonds. And the question is, the if we how we are doing on our annual payments, we're going to add some more bonding this year. And what does that do to our percent? And I realize it's low, but someone asked me the question this morning. I was thinking that that it was said earlier that we were kind of going to be a revenue neutral as old bonds drop off, and if we add this one, it's not a great change in the annual payments.
I would have to go back to a different set of numbers. I feel a little nervous about trying to speak to that off the top of my head. But I can tell you kind of in some round numbers, right? The bond issue payments for House Bill 14 are expected to be approximately $400,000 in fiscal year 2022. And I believe it was $9.1 million in fiscal year 2023. But what I am not recalling right off the top of my head is what once these bonds are fully issued for House Bill 14, which is for all these programs that we're working with, TSEP, RRGL, RDGP, and the Long Range Building Program, $91.5 million of general obligation bonds is recommended or requested by the executive. And I don't remember what the final, once those bonds are all issued, what the final amount is going to be.
Could you get it?
Yeah. Exactly. I don't know if you heard that, Kathy, but just in general, if you could go ahead and wrap us a general sheet of those numbers, maybe not for necessarily business in the committee at this point, but for individual members, especially when we're talking to other legislators throughout the building, we would certainly appreciate that.
Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to do that.
Excellent. Thank you.
Okay. So I am going to go back to our fund balance analysis.
Yeah, we got it.
As I was saying, you know, the fund that's used for the Renewable Resource Grants Program also funds the Reclamation and Development Grants Program. So that's why you won't find it actually hooked on to this program analysis. Yeah, I can manage to get back there. Okay, so, but where you will find it is under your tab 3 on the Renewable Resource Grant and Loans Program. And it is called the Natural Resource Fund Balance. It should, you know, we're talking about the Natural Resource Project Fund. And Lindsay and Anna had talk to you a lot about the different revenues. So all I'm going to say is that the revenues in the 2 years of the biennium are expected to be $3.6 million in fiscal year 2022 and then approximately $4 million in fiscal year 2023. So a total of $7.6 million. You can see in this chart both House Bill 6 and House Bill 7 appropriations. From this account, $6.3 million of appropriations will be for the Renewable Resource Grant Program. And this account does end up with a negative fund balance. So even though they started with a little bit of money at the beginning of the biennium, and these are all projections, mind you, it's projected that they are going to end at a negative $3 million. I have comments and issues written related to this situation, and they are going to be the same across any program where we're showing a projected negative balance by the end of the biennium. The first and most important thing is that these agencies will never, ever allow their fund to go negative. It just doesn't happen. This really is intended to show you that the appropriations that you're being asked to consider are greater than the amount of funds projected to flow into this account. Now, that said, what would happen if the funds actually came in as projected, which is lower than the amount if you were to approve House Bill 6 and House Bill 7 as they have been introduced? Well, you would have the potential that the program would need to reduce projects, and that's what they'd have to do to be able to get through. And so, you know, that is what your consideration is as we look at the available funds for these programs. Anna Miller also mentioned in her discussion that, and it's for this reason, the way that House Bill 6 and House Bill 14 are laid out runs the risk of having projects that are at the bottom of the House Bill 6 funding list not funded. And they have a higher rank than the list of projects that are in House Bill 14. So you have this issue where it would be possible that lower ranked grants would get funded before the higher ranked grants. So that's just one of the consequences. You need to be aware of that. And you can decide if you want to think about adding language so that higher ranked grants that where there may not be funding available are funded through bond proceeds. We can talk about that as we get to work and doing our work in the program, Mr. Chairman. That really concludes my comments.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Kathy. Do we have any questions from members of the committee or any general conversation here before we move on to committee business? Not seeing any. Really fast, we're going to take a step back as we started to move into Kathy's breakdown. I had asked if there was anybody left online with general proponent testimony, and right at the cutoff, we did have, I believe, Jeffrey raise his hand. I just wanted us to stick with the breakdown and then call him in afterwards. So, Jeffrey, are you with us?
Yes, sir.
Hey, sorry about that, but I guess it's not so much morning anymore. But nonetheless, good morning, and please feel free to go ahead.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Jeff T. Berry. I work for Montana's conservation districts, and House Bill 6 has been a wonderful opportunity for us to get conservation on the ground with our members out there. We participated in this program for many years now, and we like working with the legislature and your staff to get these projects ranked and with DNRC. And it's just a good program, and our Montana Association of Conservation District supports House Bill 6. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Well, thank you, sir. We appreciate you coming in today, and we appreciate your testimony. With that, I'm pretty sure that I'm not seeing anybody else on Zoom who I might have missed. So we're going to go ahead and call that our general proponent-opponent testimony for the day. I don't see anything left on our sheet officially for the committee to be doing today. I did, however, want to have a couple quick conversations, or at least throw a couple things on the radar for members. I'm not entirely sure that we have to make a decision today, but the first thing to throw out on everybody's radar is we have a substantial amount of written testimony, not just for the projects that we have heard through House Bill 6, 11, 14, but also the projects that we have heard through 6, 11, 14, and also House Bill 12. We have those printed out for us in a single stack copy for each individual bill. The question I would put before the committee, or something for the committee to think about, would be whether or not the committee would like to have an individual folder of those printed up for each member, or whether the committee would prefer to house that testimony in a single stack in a central location that we can peruse at our leisure as we run up into executive action. Representative Hamilton, do you have a preference either way?
I think the idea of the single stack, maybe in a notebook or something that might be here at the committee as we are going through things that we could look at, or maybe it's on your desk in the House or something.
Okay, that sounds fair to myself, and obviously we have a couple committee members running around doing bills and such, so we can track back with them and see what their opinion is on the subject, but I think that works fairly well, kind of along the lines of what we were talking about with the deep dive House Bill 12 project lists. Then the next thing that we had to talk about was, and Kathy, you can correct me if I am wrong here, but it was my impression that we had originally been planning to hear House Bill 6 projects into the next week, into Wednesday, I believe it was. However, it is now looking like we will not have or we will have gone through all of the House Bill 6 projects by the time that Wednesday wraps around. So we are looking at the possibility of an empty day for the purposes of scheduling for the committee. So that obviously leaves us with a couple of different options. One of those options would be for us to set something else up for that day, whether it is a training of some sort, a rundown on a section of how different bills, projects, grant programs are funded throughout, and along the lines of what we have seen a little bit of here today. The other option would be for us to just take Wednesday off. I know that committee members have bills running through the process, a bunch of which are about to come alive and start making their way through. Representative Hamilton, you have a preference on that one way or another?
I don't, although it might be useful to have a short period of time, maybe it's only an hour, hour and a half, of just sort of work time together to kind of gather up all the questions maybe that we have, and maybe talking with Kathy a little bit to maybe give her some direction about how to answer those questions for us. I could see that being useful.
That sounds pretty fair to me. Kathy, generic question for you. If we were to decide to keep Wednesday as committee business with a specific agenda of whatever it is that we wanted to do, say along the lines of what Representative Hamilton said, having a little bit of a committee work session, is that, or what are the notice requirements around us posting that? How long do we have to be able to make that decision?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think, all as always, 3 days are the best. It's a work session. It's not a hearing. But generally, you know, the requirement is always for 3 days when the committee is meeting.
And now, you can clear this up for me. And so does that mean that we would need to have the decision made and be in a position to provide notice on the Sunday? Or does that mean that we could ostensibly come in on Monday and make our decision, still meet our notice requirement?
I think, Mr. Chairman, we have the ability to update the schedule very quickly. And so you know, it's not a bill hearing, so it's a little bit easier to notice. We don't, you know, we don't need to get it through the whole laws system. So I think that we would probably be okay if we got notice out on Monday.
All right. That sounds about right to me. Members, considering the fact that we have this whole technological integration thing running on our side for the session, I'm going to go ahead and say that we think about what we might like to see from that Wednesday work session where we could all come together and make sure that we have any questions that we are currently looking at as we head towards executive action ready to go, running those through. Kathy, trying to give her some direction on what we might be looking for that, and we post that good stuff in Teams, and that'll allow us to circle back with members who are currently active elsewhere here in the legislature, and then we should be able to come to a decision there and make sure that we still meet our requirements. Does that sound good, Representative Hamilton? Excellent. Well, then, with that, is there anything from anybody online for the good of the order, as it were? Hearing none, not seeing any hands. Is there anything for the good of the order here in person for the committee? Seeing none, nor hands being raised, although it'd be kind of weird to have everybody raising their hands here in person. I would just say that it looks like on our... Kathy, were you saying something?
Yes.
Okay, thought I was missing something from you. Never mind. Looks like on our agenda, we are planning on coming in at 10 o'clock on Monday. Kathy, is that correct? Perfect. Well, then, all right. Well, then, with that, folks, we're going to go ahead and adjourn long range with the plan of coming back here on Monday at 10 a.m. to continue with House Bill 6, Renewable Resource Grant and Loan Projects. With that, long range will stand adjourned.